This is Scenic Roots talking writing. Our guest is Victor Wooten, the only man to have been voted Bass Player of the Year in Bass Player Magazine's Reader's Poll 3 times in a row. He was also voted one of the top 10 bassists of all time in Rolling Stone. This is Victor Wooten playing bass with Bella Fleck playing banjo, Howard Levy playing harmonica, and Victor's brother Roy Wooten, known as Future Man, playing his signature drumitar. Since 1988, they've been playing music together as Bella Fleck and the Flecktones. Howard Levy left the band for a time, but he's been back for more than a decade. This is one of the most recent recordings they've made together in 2016. It's part of an album released in tandem with Victor's first book, The Music Lesson. Wooten's second book, just published, is titled The Spirit of Music, described by a reviewer in the Washington Post as a book that stands happily against traditional music pedagogy and canned notions of achievement. It's the sequel to his first book, and like that book, it's an allegory in the form of a Harry Potter-ish adventure, reflecting the playful spirit that's also at the heart of his music making. With the Flecktones. What you guys did together exemplified the whole notion that in order to make music, you have to play. It always looked to me like you guys were just having a great time, like a bunch of kids in a sandbox.
You're right. You're so right, Richard. That's the great thing about music, is that it has that ability to bring people together and to make sense out of things that may not seem to make sense. Music is powerful like that. I mean, like my brother Joseph, the keyboard player, he'll say, you can take someone who coughs and someone who drops a chair on the floor, two different things that don't seem to relate. But if you do those things in rhythm, in a repetitive rhythm, all of a sudden you'll start dancing to it,
Yeah.
And so music has that ability to bring people and things that don't seem to relate together and show that, yes, we can relate. Yeah, I like that.
And the notion that at one point, as you said in the book, that music is harmony.
Yeah.
Which is, seems to me, your thesis in your book.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we all have that ability, and music is a great way to get along. It teaches us how to listen, how to recognize our differences, and then celebrate them. I play the bass guitar. When I play with Bela Fleck, he's not trying to make the bass be a banjo. He recognizes that the bass strengths are at being a bass. So we recognize our differences and support them, and then, maybe even exploit the fact that, you're good at doing what you do. You do that, And then when we're listening to that music, if I'm standing next to you listening to the music, I don't care what color your skin is, who you voted for, who you pray to, the music just makes us agree. We're even nodding our head at the same time in agreement. You know, music is powerful that way. And then with the second book that I just wrote, The Spirit of Music, it raises the question, because of its power, is there anyone or entity that are trying to get rid of it because of its power?
Yeah, I like the whole battle against the dark side in the book. Because
the phaser.
Yeah, the phasers, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it allows you to talk about something that's really difficult to talk about. You know, the role that music plays in our lives, I guess, the way it works for us.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, seems like so much of it happens on an unconscious level that it's hard to put it into words.
In a big sense, you are right, you know, but there are scientists now and neurologists and people that are studying music as well as studying musicians' brains. I literally have friends who have been put in MRI machines and while they play and they study their brain, because science wants to know how our brains do what they do. You know, there are parts of our brains, when we're playing at a high level, there are parts of our brains that light up like fireworks. But then there's other parts of our brains that completely shut down. You know, the part about judgment, this is good, this is bad, that gets out of the way when we're improvising at a high level. And we're just there in the zone, you know, and that's powerful. And so science wants to know, you know, science has shown that kids learning music do better academically than the rest of the subjects. You know, it's, to me, it's sort of like the fact that I can buy a liter of Coke cheaper than I can buy a liter of water. And as absurd as that sounds, it's done on purpose. But by whom and for what reason? And music can fall into that category, too, if we're not careful. And that's what I wanted to point out. Yes, we all love music, so let's pay attention so that we don't lose it.
More than one person has suggested that the way music is delivered now through streaming services, that, I hate to say that, but there's this sense that it's almost disposable.
Yeah, I mean, you know, every advance forward also, you know, has the opposite possibility. You know, we all have cars now, but whoever was making horse and buggies way back, you know, is not so happy probably about the car. And also, even though with the car we get there faster, we don't see as much as if we were on a horse and buggy. So every gain can produce a loss. And I see a lot of possible losses as well as a lot of possible gains in music and the technology that we use. But the fact that the artists are not making money from it anymore, where, you know, when we were young, Richard, when we were young, we would happily pay for music and television was free.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's completely reversed. Right, we'll happily pay for television and then complain that there's nothing to watch, but we want our music for free. And so that puts us, people who make music for a living, it puts us in a jam.
I know, I don't have an immediate answer to that. I do know that, you know, I'm here on a university campus, so most of the time, but for the last year, there's lots of young people around. And I can't think of any young person I've talked to who doesn't put a high value on music and doesn't have
right.
an intimate relationship with it.
Exactly.
And I don't think
I agree with that.
It's not that they consider it disposable, but if you make something available to people for nothing, they're not going to complain.
Right.
Why would they?
Yeah, and well, most won't, no, because it's the ease that we can get music that will make us overlook the problems of how we're getting and what we're getting.
Mm.
So, you know, most of us who know that music is indispensable, there's no way we want to live without it. But it's sort of like the same way we know that we can't live without water, but we've been convinced that we need to pay for it. And that we need to pay more for it than we will pay for Coke or Pepsi. Right? So to make it easy for us to get, it can also make us a little brain dead in other areas. So all of these little young people who understand the value of music, I can almost guarantee are not paying for it. You know, we may be paying for a streaming service, and when the streaming service is making money, but the artist is not. And that's the thing, is that it can make us aware in one way and brain dead in another. And that's the thing where, you know, with this new book, I just want to raise questions. Like you said, I don't know, I don't have an immediate answer. Neither do I. But someone needs to be asking these questions. And that's what I did in this book.
Yeah, understood. As long as we're having the conversation, we're looking to try to find some sort of answer. I like, you know, your observation of the essential paradox inherent in everything in our lives. Perhaps summarized by, if at first you don't succeed, fail again.
Exactly. Exactly. That's how we get good at anything. We learn to walk by falling over and over. And because we didn't give up, you know, no kid just said, hey, this walking thing just ain't for me. You know, mama, just push me for the rest of my life. We don't give up. You know, that's to give up is a thing that we learn. Right, a child will just do it over and over and make a game out of it. Falling is fun, but now you think about it, it's hard to fall. You know, we're in that, when we finally learn to walk well, it gets hard to fall. It's not that we don't fall, but it just rarely happens. And now we're so good at walking, we're so good at keeping our balance because we've failed over and over. But a lot of times in lessons, especially music lessons, we criticize you every time you fail, and that's not fun. So people end up wanting to quit when not realizing that failing is a part of the growth. And instead of criticizing the failing, we should really, really like pay attention and congratulate the person for the effort, whether they failed or not. When you make trying fun, failing is just a part of it. So like the book says, you know, fail once, fail again. First you don't succeed, fail again.
Fun comes up a lot. And I think it's hard to have fun if you don't relax. It's kind of hard to make music if you don't relax too, right?
Yeah. Anything that we do well, we want to get it to that relaxed place, you know. And the quicker we can do that, I believe the faster we will learn. You know, and so, you know, teaching comes into that in my mind when I start talking about that. But yeah, we're trying to get to what we call natural. In other words, when we see someone who's really good and really relaxed, and we say, wow, that person's a natural. But in music, we want you to become natural by doing some unnatural things, like lock yourself in a room and practice all day. Right? You got to think about when we were learning to speak English as kids, nobody told us to lock ourselves in a room and practice. Right? That's an unnatural process. But when we're saying that that person is a natural, we're really saying that that person is like nature. Right? So to me, nature is a part of becoming natural. But musicians are told to get ourselves and lock ourselves in a room away from nature, which is the exact opposite of being natural. So, you know, with these books, the music lesson, the spirit of music, I'm trying to bring back the awareness of the natural process and the benefit of it. And I think music learned in a natural process will produce a lot of benefits.
At one point, you quote your teacher in the book. I think it's Michael you're quoting when you said, music can be divided into 10 equal parts. By using all the parts equally, any musician can sound like a seasoned professional.
Yes.
I'm assuming you figured that out for yourself.
Well, I guess so. It was more of an awareness of what was already happening. In other words, when I was learning to play music, you know, I was learning a bunch of things. Even when I had to learn myself, I'd put on a record, put the needle on the record, and realize I was learning more than just what note to play. Having grown up in a band with my brothers and having been playing dances and parties and gigs since I was very, very young, I realized that getting the note right is not what made people dance.
This is Scenic Roots, talking writing. Our guest is the uber bass player, teacher, and writer, Victor Wooten. probably always best known as the bass player with Bela Fleck and the Flecktones.
Early on that there's something more than just the right note that's going on here, where a lot of our education of music is about playing the right note and knowing what the right note is even before you play it, right? Even when we talk, we know that the tone of the word can change what the word means, the dynamics of the word. So music's the same way. It's not just the right note, because nobody gets up to dance because the song's in a certain key. We dance to the rhythm, the feel. And even if the rhythm's right, you know, if the nightclub, all their subwoofers go out and we're only listening to the tweeters, the rhythm might be right, the notes might be right. It might be your favorite song, but you won't feel like dancing because the tone is not right. So, you know, it just came through awareness, especially when I started being asked to teach music, and I realized that, you know, most people were teaching notes. And I thought, these notes, you know, what they're teaching is good, but they're just people are leaving a lot out. So I decided I'll let everyone else teach notes. I'm going to teach everything else except the note, and try to, you know, level out this teaching playground. And that's why I came out with the other 9 elements of music. Of course, there's more than 10, but to keep it simple, I made it 10, with notes being one, but there's 9 other things that are just as important as the notes.
And I like that could equally be applied to pretty much anything in life.
That's the whole key. That's the whole key to the books, is that I'm saying music, but you can insert whatever you want. And that's been the beauty, is that I get people. I had a woman who's been running. She ran 30 miles the other day, and she was just telling me about how the things in the book relate to her mindset of running. I've had a chef tell me the same thing. I had a gardener, a woman who's a master gardener, and she went through those whole 10 elements of music and showed me how in her garden she uses each one of those. And I was like, wow, it's working. This is exactly what I want. Yeah.
My wife was on the faculty here, and she said more than once, if you want to learn something, teach it.
That's it.
And exactly. It sounds like that's working for you.
It's working for me. You know, I even wrote that in the book, teaching completes the circle of knowledge, or the cycle of knowledge. Yeah. You know, once you can teach it, that means you really have to know it. You know, and I think it was attributed to Einstein, said if you can't teach it simply, you don't know it well enough. And teaching will cause you to have to know it. So I urge somebody that when you learn something, if you want to know it well, teach it to someone else. It really doesn't matter what it is or how much you know. There's always someone who knows less. And you starting to teach it correctly, teaching it correctly, will cause you to know it even more. Yeah, so I totally agree with that.
Yeah, my experience in teaching is, oh my God, don't ask me another question. I'm not sure I can answer it until you finally realize it's all questions.
That's the important part, yeah.
nobody necessarily has any of the answers, but by framing the question, at least we're starting to come to terms with it.
Yes.
To understand
yes.
it.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, a lot of us want answers, but answers are usually the end of the dialogue, where questions keep it going. And good teachers will keep you questioning, and that's what, you know, the teacher in the books, Michael, his whole thing is answering a question with a question, because he wants you to keep questioning, not just end with an answer. And through your questions, you will find answers, but you'll know that the journey hasn't ended. And so it's like trying to count to infinity. You never get any closer to the end.
I know it, and especially for young people, I think that's hard to accept that. There is no answer, you know. They want answers. Of course they do. In their minds, well, you know. You can explain this.
I do know. And yes, there are answers, but the answer isn't the end.
Right.
That's the main thing. The answer isn't the end of the quest. And that's what a good teacher will do is, they'll help you discover the answers, but hopefully in a way that you realize there's still more.
More questions,
and that's,
usually.
To me, exactly, more questions. Yes.
Do you teach regularly?
I do. I'm fortunate now that I get to teach quite regularly to groups of people, usually at a time, mainly every month through Berklee College of Music in Boston.
Are you teaching virtually?
Virtually right now, yeah, mm-hmm. Which I'm loving because it's allowing me to be home, which I haven't been home this long in 30 years. So I've been enjoying it, yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine. I was thinking when you guys were playing regularly as the Flecktones, you didn't have a whole lot of downtime, did you?
Not at all. No, not at all. We toured heavily for 30 years, I guess. Over 30 years now. And, at the origin of the band, we had Howard Levy on harmonica. And he had two very young kids at the time. Mm-hmm. And he was away. And we'd hear about that, and it was a struggle for him. And, we didn't quite get it because he was the only one with kids. And all of a sudden, I had kids, and now I'm getting it. Now Bela has kids, and he gets it. So it's an evolution. But, we've been doing this thing for a long time. Our kids are all grown now, except Bela's. Bela's are still young.
But what I find heartening is that you're going to still keep doing it. At least that's the impression I have. It's been a while. It's been, two or three years since you played a gig.
It's been a while, and we've been doing it a lot less. This is still what we do. We make music. We travel making music. But no one's doing it at the same rate as we were back in the late 80s and early 90s.
Who would want to, right?
Exactly. I mean, young people want to. Mm. The kids need your time if you have kids.
Yes. I guess that's another one of the questions that we all have to answer at some point. How are we going to divide our time? And how can we do it most with those who need it will get it?
For me, it helped for me to look at fast forward to the end of my life. And, if I'm fortunate enough to be at the end, still sane, clear of mind at the end of my life, what will I be thinking about? Will I be thinking and saying, man, I should have practiced more, I should have done more gigs? Or will I be saying, man, I should have spent more time with my kids and my loved ones, I should have told my wife I loved her more times, And when I look at those answers, which are easy, when I think about the end of my life, I realize that I should pay attention to that, even in the middle or beginning of my life. And at that point, it makes it clear. Yeah, touring and gigging is fun, do it while you can, but not at the risk of ruining relationships or missing relationships, quality relationships.
You almost put a line under one of the elements in which music can be divided, and it seems to me that it's what life comes down to, listening.
Listening, yes. Yes, listening to me is the most important. Even though I say that all of the elements are equal, for me it really does come down to listening, because that is what is going to point you in the direction of how to use all the other elements, is listening. And in music education, there aren't enough exercises that help us become better at listening.
As we've already established, these apply equally to many other pursuits, but that one seems to me, as you were just saying, that's the essence. Listening to yourself, listening to your experience, listening to the people around you, listening to the little ones.
Absolutely.
That's really what it's all about. You know,
it really is. It really is in all aspects of life, you know. Cause to me, listening is sort of like equal to having questions. You know, where talking is more like the answer. You know, they're both important. But the listening is really, really the key. If I'm going to play music with you, I don't even really know what to play until I listen to you. And it's the same way if I'm listening to an audience. I need to pay attention to their reactions, what they're asking for. I need to be listening to them. I need to listen to my instrument, how it's responding, so I know whether it needs to be tuned or whatever. Listening is just the key to life, becoming a better listener.
That's what I always like so much about listening to you with the Flecktones. It sounded as if you were all in the moment and surprising each other all the time.
Totally. Totally. And the cool thing, you know, is a big testament to Baylor's greatness is that he allowed it. You know, and a lot of bands, when you have a band leader, you got to listen to the band leader. You know, James Brown was a lot like that. You had to watch everything he said. He would fine you if you made mistakes. But it produced a certain thing, and it changed all of music. Baylor did it in a way where he said, I'm a leader. Baylor described himself as a leader among equals. So we all had equal say. Baylor knew that I was probably a better bass player than he was. So it didn't make so much sense for him to tell me what to play. You know, in the same sense, if I wrote a song, I'm not going to tell Baylor what his banjo part is. He's the banjo player. And because of that, Baylor Fleck and the Flecktones had Baylor's name in the title, but the band sounded like a band. Mm-hmm. It didn't only sound like Baylor.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
The book by Victor Wooten, just published, is called The Spirit of Music. It's a celebration of the power of music, and at the same time, a reminder of its inherent fragility. Scenic Roots, talking writing on listener-supported public radio.